I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us.
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you. This week's book guest is Fight Night by Miriam Taves. What's it about? Well, it's about a young girl, her falling apart grandma, and her pregnant actress mother.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, everyone in it is delightfully crackers.
In this episode, we discuss air travel,
mental health,
embarrassing parents,
giving pregnant women seats,
and farts. Trigger warning, in this episode, we mention suicide. Welcome, Carriad.
Welcome, Sarah.
We've got a book guest and no human guest.
No human guest. It's just, we're just kicking back, old school. You just relax. Yeah. It's just Carriad and Sarah.
The OGs. So you chose this book and you had previously read this book. So how did it come to you? What was the origin story?
Embarrassingly, it was an Instagram thing that it kept.
Why is it embarrassing?
Well, because that's where I get a lot of my book recommendations.
That's not embarrassing.
I feel a bit embarrassed. Like I should be getting them from the Times Literary Supplement.
Oh, no. If Instagram knows what the kind of thing you like, that's a positive thing.
Yeah, I do follow lots of people who read.
Yes.
Which is great. Great for them. They're good at reading.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, it's got a nice bright cover and it was one of those ones that kept popping up.
Did it?
Yeah, like for like 3 months, people kept sharing.
Did they?
just finish this.
Oh, that's good.
And then she did, she also wrote Women Talking, which I haven't read.
Oh, it's the same author
as
Women Talking.
It's the same author. And the film had come out and everyone was going on and on about that. And then I think this was the book that...
And that was a novel about something true.
Yes.
Yes.
So then I went, you know, I was in the bookshop and I was like, oh yeah, that lady, oh, that book. And that was literally all I know. Actually, tell a lie, I got it on a Kindle, I think, when I was ill last year.
Ah.
So it was a Kindle buy and I was like, oh yeah, I'll just... But I knew nothing. I never read any of her stuff before. I just saw lots of people going, this is good.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about it, which is quite how... That's how I like to roll.
But I like... sometimes in life, but especially with books where it feels like they sort of, they find you, they came to you at the right time.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. And I started it, I don't know how you, I didn't like it at first, because it's so, we should say it's about Swiv.
So because the narrator is a child.
Yeah, 12?
Well, I'm glad you don't know, because she's nine.
Oh, they don't say. Oh,
because it's unspecified.
Yes.
And then when it gets to her height, I was like, 4'5". Yeah. How tall? Because at times I thought she was 14. Because her grandmother and mother talk about such adult things around her.
Yes.
I knew that she was younger than 16, but had no idea how
young.
Does
she sneakily never tell you how old she is? Is it one of
those? Unless I've missed a detail, but on the internet it says she's 9.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a bit of a cheeky novel thing, isn't it? Because she doesn't read. Obviously, she reads much more maturely and interestingly, like a 9-year-old. But it's in the, it's in the rhythm of a 9-year-old.
There's a tone at the beginning where, yes, I balked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she's like writing to her dad, who's not there, who's disappeared. And she doesn't know why her dad has disappeared.
Yeah.
And it reads like a stream of consciousness of a child.
Yeah.
And when I started it, I was like, oh, this is really annoying. It's like a 9-year-old constantly talking
style,
to you.
She's made the decision to not put, obviously, speech in quotation marks and also not to put it separate from the text. So it has a really flowing sense that at the beginning might, you know, take a while to sort of judder into, but once you're into it, it means that it just flows so beautifully and feels like you're just sitting there in the kitchen or on the airplane with them.
Yeah, yeah. And they live in Canada, and so she lives with her grandmother, who's, you know, old and falling apart slightly and heavily
medicated.
She's
caring for her grandmother.
Yeah, she's caring for her grandmother.
We're hearing
she doesn't go to school. She's dropped out of school. Her mum is pregnant and is an actor and is rehearsing for a play.
Yeah.
And they live in a rough neighbourhood, and there seems like someone's trying to make them move out of their house.
There's Jay Gatsby.
Jay Gatsby, there's police. She's definitely a troubled kid, I guess would be, you know, a good cliched way of describing her.
Because of the fighting at school?
She's been fighting at school. She's kicked out, and she, and you know, her and her grandma watch basketball and Murder, She Wrote and Call the Midwife.
Call the Midwife. I love the Call the Midwife references.
I same, so at the beginning I was like, oh, this is so annoying. She's such an annoying child. And then just slowly you just drop into her voice. And I don't know you, but I just think it's fucking brilliant. I just love this
it
book
does
so much.
So much.
It does so much.
Say, like, this book's so and so
just skilled
expertly.
Piece of writing.
Yeah.
So skilled. Yeah. To be a 9-year-old's voice telling you these things that the grandma is saying. And the mum is saying, and reveal the things she reveals about this very, very fucked up family. And we have one chapter in the grandma's voice.
Yes, where she records her.
And it is literally like, again, stream of consciousness. But the slowly, slowly revelations of what has happened to her dad, or what has happened to her mum and her grandmother and the other members of the family who have died how they died. And this house is... it's full of grief and depression and mental health.
Yeah.
But it's never done in a kind of mawkish way.
The thing that I felt really hugely about it, and that is a testament to the author, is that I felt so much love all the time.
So much love.
The love for the grandma, the love for Swiftfoot, the unborn baby.
Yeah, they call Gord because it's as big as a gourd.
The love that goes between her and her mother, even though it is a dysfunctional relationship. Her mum feels a lot of guilt. She feels like a failure, but she's always apologising.
Yeah.
Her anger never feels to be, the mum's anger never feels to be oppressive or...
Well, no, it's just, it's incredible, isn't it?
And the mum's, and the grandmother's illnesses... I mean, this, if you to describe this book, it would sound so depressing, but it is never depressing.
Yeah, that's why I think so. That's why I enjoy it so much. And yeah, this was my second read. And, you know, I didn't intend to like read it super closely because I read it quite recently and I couldn't help myself. I was like, oh, I'm just going to read it. It's so good. Like, I'm just going to sit and enjoy this book. It's so brilliant. So the grandma... is originally, she sort of speaks German.
Yes.
But described as being Russian immigrant. So obviously somewhere in Europe at some point, her family came over to this. And lots of these people from her town came over. There's a huge community of them living in Canada and a huge community of people from the same village living in Fresno in California. In the second half of the book, they go to visit some cousins, Ken and Lou, in Fresno. And the grandma is drip feeding this insane history of what happened to her. She's one of 15 kids, 14 kids.
Children. So when she was born, she was left at the hospital because her mum was too tired and sick and couldn't cope. And then they came back for her when she felt strong enough.
When she was like two or something.
Yeah, and she slept in a hallway. She was so small and she stopped the house burning down.
She was in charge of the coal.
Yeah.
And Swift always describes it's like, oh, she's talking her secret language. And I couldn't work out if it was German or like she speaks some German in the book or if it was Yiddish as well. I couldn't work out. I was like, but there's obviously lots of, you know, immigrant families living in this area and grandma goes to visit all these old ladies who are all falling apart but have this incredible attitude to aging and
humour.
Talking about so much humour.
ending it themselves or laughing on the telephone about someone who's decided to get cremated because he found out how much cheaper it was and stylish because everyone else was doing it.
Even though he spent his life telling them they couldn't get cremated.
And a 9-year-old trying to work out, but he'll be dead. Why would he matter about the cost or being in fashion? And he's got as an older lady, the grandma and her friends, that making complete sense to them, that this skinflint decided to get cremated because it's cheaper.
And they're just constantly talking about death. Like they talk about death all the time.
Yeah.
And Swiv is, I guess the other thing is you're dealing with as well is like Swift knows a lot of stuff and also doesn't know a lot of stuff. Mm. So you have that child perspective, like she understands that the grandma is sick and is dying, but she's also got this like terrible anxiety because she's so worried about her mum, mm-hmm. and her mum had left them before and her dad has just disappeared.
Yeah, so she's got no idea where her dad is, and sometimes you forget that in the fun of the yeah. novel, and then she'll say, well, you'll know this already because you know where you are, and you're going, oh, this isn't for me, it's for her
dad. She's writing these sort of writing as if she's writing a diary to her dad.
Yeah. So that's this massive question mark, and that is huge sadness. Where is the dad?
And the men, there's a lot of stuff, isn't it? Because it's three women,
and
really.
And with her, even when I thought I was reading from a sort of 12 or 13-year-old's perspective rather than nine, her awareness of the outside world, the mum having a problem with the director, who like touched her all over, for instance. And then later on in more detail, sort of a director wanting her to do things she didn't want to do, like taking all of her clothes off.
Yeah.
She's a child.
Yeah.
And she has that awareness.
Well, they're super honest with her, aren't they? Yeah. Like they have, the mum and grandma have an amazing conversation about the mum's asking the grandma when she last had sex.
Yeah.
And Sariv is like dying. It's like, you're all so embarrassing.
But the grandma, when her daughter, Swift's mother, was losing her virginity, sort of gave her like a picnic basket and a congratulations card and packed
so
snacks.
Funny. It's so
and
funny.
And poor Swift is listening to it and it's just the worst. And also the things they talk about, not filtering in public. Like there's a scene on a bus, which I really felt, because I've so recently been heavily pregnant on London Transport, where no one will give Swift's mum a seat.
Yeah, they literally won't give her a seat. They tell her to fuck off.
But she's doing that thing we all wish we had done, where she's like making a scene about it. And she's telling them she's pregnant. And one of the men's just like, congratulations.
I know, and he doesn't move. I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
Did people not give you a seat?
No. And I honestly, when I was nine...
Did you ask? Did you say, give me that seat? I started demanding it.
No. Because I'm too angry. Because I wouldn't have been able to ask in a civilised way. I would get so furious.
I used to tap them on the shoulder and say,
they would look up from their phones and look at me and then go, I didn't see you. And they'd be sitting in the special
seats. I'm so efficient.
No, I admire it about you. I honestly think it's the difference between a middle class and working class upbringing.
Yeah, definitely. Because I feel like, excuse me.
Exactly.
And I would do the tap on the shoulder and be like, that's my seat.
Whereas I just send bad vibes from my head.
Well, I get to sit down.
Yeah, I know.
That's how class works.
Whereas I'm still angry. It's just all aimed inwards.
Oh, see, this is why we have a class problem in this country. I find it outrageous not to tap people on the shoulder and just be like, get up. I do it for other people. I tap them and say, there's an old lady down there.
It's wonderful if people do it for other people. And I have to say, once a teenage girl stood up for me. A teenage girl stood up. And she was like an example to all of these adults of...
Yeah, I've had that. Do you know what the worst? I had another pregnant woman tried to stand up.
Well, that's
she said, you can sit down. And I was like, no. Yeah. And then I said to the man next to me, I said, you get up. She shouldn't get up. Look at her. How can you not? It comes out my mouth before I've even dealt with it.
Can I tell you something else I've noticed though? So I've had it where if I'm holding Albie in a sling, a pregnant woman will offer me a seat. Because, you know, they're the other person who's empathetic. But I've seen this thing that if Steen, who's, you know, tall, handsome man, he gets up to help a woman, say with a buggy or to offer a seat, all the other men start performatively acting like gentlemen. It's like, oh, you'll do it for each other because you feel each other's gaze.
Yeah, but not for me.
Oh, I'm like him. I also, so then. So
Sarah, I could be on your army.
Yes. So Steen helped a woman on with a buggy on the Piccadilly line. And then the next stop, another woman, and like five men got up to like, no, I'll help you. And she's looking around like, what is this tube? Everyone ignores me everywhere I go.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a great scene on the bus.
There's a really great scene.
Where, she demands seats. And I that really annoyed me that they carried on they called her crazy.
In terms of your children,
yes.
Do you think you'll embarrass them?
So I know publicly. I do. My daughter tells me already.
Oh, really?
Oh, she already told me.
Oh, okay.
Have I not told you this?
No.
Went to see her in a show. And... this is for the therapy session. Went to see her and do her little drama show. Wasn't doing anything. Wasn't being embarrassing.
You did call it a little drama show, did you?
I know.
You can't be like, I'm a pro. You
know. Oh, how lovely, you're all trying. Is it a workshop? I just went and sat down. And then afterwards she came up to me and said, you're so embarrassing. Stop looking at me. She's seven. And I am now torn because I was raised by a very embarrassing man. Very embarrassing. He
was nude on the stairs doing press ups.
Nude on the stairs doing press ups.
I didn't see that, by the way, everyone. I have heard tell.
But that was inside.
But you had friends over and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But like he would say out loud, my dad, my job is to embarrass you. Oh yeah, like he revelled in this.
But this is almost like,
so how dare my daughter think me sitting quietly is embarrassing? She hasn't got a fucking clue.
But what you just said, that your dad said,
yeah,
he said my job is to embarrass you, it's literally like
a
quote in a letter from Swift's mum to her.
Oh, Swift's,
which she quotes,
yeah, Swift's mum writes
the
her
good
a
enough
mad
mother.
Oh my God, D.W. Winnicott, yeah.
D.W. Winnicott, yes. I'm just trying
He's
to
an amazing,
it.
Amazing guy. So Swift gives editorial meetings and yeah. she makes her grandma
gives them
and
homework.
Her, yeah, she gives them an assignment. They need to write a letter to Gord before the baby is born. And grandma writes a very beautiful letter and her mum writes a letter of someone, I would say, having a breakdown, which...
Yeah, I was going to ask what you thought about that.
I thought it was really sad, that letter, because it becomes clear how unstable her mum is. Yeah. And that's when Swift... starts really, really worrying that her mum is going to take her own life because she seems so mentally unstable.
Okay, I didn't think she seemed so mentally unstable.
Oh,
I think it's because I'm not a child reading that. It felt, look, as someone who, like, you know, does pages. once you start writing,
when your child asks you to write a letter to the unborn baby, you don't give them the stream of consciousness. You go like, oh, you know, Swift just wanted a nice, reassuring letter. You feel the tension of Swift that she, like you said, she's not only her grandma's carer, she's her mother's carer as well. So that's why she is in that weird adult child position. If you don't know who Winnicott is, he's like a child psychotherapist who very famously created this phrase, the good enough mother, and said children don't need perfect mothers.
And the quote
the
50s, she has,
they need mothers who are good enough, because otherwise you think perfection is what...
Yes, I think the quote, and I'm paraphrasing it because I can't find it, but it's about how I'm a failure, but it's good that I'm a failure because the duty of a parent is to fail, because otherwise the child has to make this leap from sort of, pleasant fiction to reality.
Yeah,
as in like what the real world is. So if you fail, they meet the real world.
and that's what Winnicott says, which is so great, because it's like, if you're a perfect mother... they'll go out into the world and they'll be so confused that other people aren't perfect.
Yeah,
which is what
and struggle with their own emotions when they are imperfect.
Exactly. Here we go. This is her mum's letter. It is important to fail at mothering, or else your child will not pass from illusion to reality. The mother teaches the child to handle frustration by being one.
By being one, yeah.
Then she drew a smiley face and a heart and the words, ha ha, and she added a PS that said, that's D.W. Winnicott's concept of the good enough mother, she wrote. Love, Mom.
Yeah.
I ran downstairs to show the letter to Grandma. She's going to kill herself, I said. and we laughed because it's... because Swift lives in this, like, so everything's so heightened and everything's so stressful.
Yes, yeah.
And she's got so much anxiety, understandably, living in this crazy, crazy house.
One of the things that she says to her mum, which is like, leave the drama on the stage. That's and her grandma sort of adds in, why don't you just realise you're normal? Like, would it kill you to realise you're normal for once? And I guess that's a really good example of how this book deals with everything so humorously.
Yeah, it reminded me, maybe that's why we like it as well, because the way they speak to each other is quite Essexy.
Yeah.
In like, it's constant humour to diffuse tension.
Mm.
So there is that constant, like, if anyone gets any kind of like emotional or sincereness, someone is making a joke really quickly and laughing at them and being like, oh, calm down, Swift. Like,
but I also think it's lover's lubricant or like bounce.
Because
we have such a strong relationship between the grandmother and the mother, even though that isn't what Swift is concentrating on. There's a moment where the mother talks about how she wishes she could be back inside her mum.
Yeah.
And I thought, God, you must really love your mum as an adult to still think that, not have this like bafflement or like, oh my God.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You can tell they've been through a lot. And then what I love, so the first half of the book is all Swiv. It's all this child's perspective. And then they get on a plane to Fresno, which is crazy. Mm. Grandma is not well enough to get on this plane. Absolutely
crazy. And she
crazy.
Has her nine-year-old carer sort of in charge of suitcases. And
in charge of suitcases. She's got nitro spray that if she sprays it three times and it doesn't work, they have to go to the hospital. And they regularly sprayed it three times.
Yes.
And then we get this, this monologue from the grandma where she has such good writing because she reveals so much why the mum is like this, where the dad is. He's basically run off because of, you know, mental health and alcoholism. And why they are trying to survive the things that have happened to them and how much they love Swiv. And Swiv is such a beautiful chapter. And then at the end, Swiv says something like, I started to breathe. Because it's like once she knows actually what's going on, rather than being having things like sex discussed in front of her, but no one is saying to her, your dad was an alcoholic and he could not handle and he left.
Yeah.
So I feel like that moment, it happens proper midpoint in the book where you're like, oh, Swiv now gets really quite what's going on.
Mm.
And then they go to see the cousins in Fresno who are actually quite old. And there's this sort of beautiful moment where Lou, this cousin who is an old hippie, Swiv discovers, and the grandma looked after him when she was 13 years old.
Mm.
And they have this bond and they're just, you know, this big grey-haired hippie man who's clearly having a breakdown as well, is just got his head on his grandma's shoulder just crying and she's just holding him, but everyone's still laughing and enjoying. And you sort of start realising, how much shit has happened to this family, but how much they, like you said, there's so much love. Like, they love each other. It's so... Yeah,
there isn't... Sometimes people who are trying to cope or trying to process trauma could be so spiteful.
Yeah, yeah.
They push away people who care about them. They don't think they're, you know, worthy of love, all of those kind of things. And, yeah, the mum is battling, but she's battling to have a good life and be good enough for her daughter. And I even loved, actually, with the mum... Even the way she talks about smoking.
I know.
So she has these sort of Marleys, like a packet sort of waiting for when she's not pregnant anymore and she can have a cigarette.
Yeah, like when Gord's not ruining her life.
And when she moans about being constipated and how she could just have a fag and a black coffee and it would sort itself out, but she can't because she's pregnant. And I just thought that's such a good example of she's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
She's struggling with it.
Because
it isn't easy.
Yeah, it's not. It's hard. And it's not the life that she... thought she was going to have, and there's clearly all this like mental health stuff going on.
She has
genetically
this,
in the family.
She has this ongoing relationship with the stage manager that we hear
that's
about.
That's so funny, that stage manager.
So she makes a comment, stage manager, and I thought this was so funny to read about in a book as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, it's a very offstage character in the book, a stage manager from rehearsals that her mum goes to. So she doesn't have time to read, and her mum says, but you watch Netflix for 3 hours a night. And then the stage manager is really funny with her and doesn't give her a cue to go on.
So then she texts the stage manager, then she gets her a card.
She doesn't text back, so she's crying.
Yeah, so then she writes her a card, and you do start seeing, this woman is a bit intense.
But actresses are.
They are, I know, I think it's a believable character. But you do sort of think, oh God, like you just want the mum to just like leave it. And then she's like, is ringing her and trying to, like, make it better. And I just think the three characters, Swiv, the mum and the grandma, are just so believable, so well-rounded. Like, I completely loved hanging out with them. I completely, felt in this family. And it reminds me slightly of Catherine Heine, all of her books, really, because it's one of those books where it's quite hard to say what it's about. Like, not much happens, not a great deal. You know, it's not like... you go to the school and you find out what's happening, or like it's just a kid and her grandma hanging out.
Well,
and then
I
they go to Fresno.
Comparing it to, and it's very different in tone, but a book that we both love, My Phantoms by Gwendoline Riley.
Oh yeah,
which is a much more
bleaker.
Pathos, much more pathos filled or bleaker version of this, which is still so well observed. Like when a parent talks, I go, yeah, that's a parent, or it's definitely that kind of parent.
That's very English, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it has much more like English like sharpness to it. Whereas this has definitely a much more like,
but it doesn't have the love as the sort of the balloon.
Protecting everybody.
Yeah.
And then I mean it
has the opposite. It has people who can't give their love to each other.
And stuff happens at the end which like we won't say because I think it's enjoyable to read it. Like
I was really worried the whole time that's what was going to happen.
Sarah's revealed it.
I haven't revealed anything.
But something does happen.
I guess that's what it is. I kept worrying something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, and actually, it's not, that's the thing. It's not that kind of book. It's one of those books that's just, I love those books where you just like hang out with some with a group of people for like a little moment of their life. And you just, you know what I mean? You just feel like you're just peeking in for like 15 minutes being like, oh, this is how they all interact. This is what all happens. And then you kind of leave them. And she's so, like, I think you have to be a really good writer to do that. Cause it's not like, oh, it's an epic adventure and then they do this and they do this. It's like, no, just, they're just living.
But it's living, but it's surviving and it's thriving.
Surviving, but it's surviving and thriving.
Because this is why I like also like weirdos in books.
Yes,
like,
she's definitely a weirdo.
But they all are. And I had a non-traditional family. I had all women and the adults didn't filter in front of children.
Yeah, yeah.
So seeing people coping with it, celebrating it, the humour in it, all of those lovely things, it is really nice as a balance to bleaker things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's why I bought it for you for your birthday, even before the podcast. Because I was like, Sarah will like this book.
Yeah.
Because it is so, like you said, it's so full of love. And it's a very uplifting, weirdly uplifting book for what they're going through. The grandma is an amazing character. Like, I loved her. I just loved her. And you can see, she's trying so hard in a life that is such a hard life.
And having so much fun.
So much fun.
Even
she's such a funny person.
She's in chronic pain. She's in the worst pain that you can have.
The bit when they're on the plane and Swiv actually falls asleep after this chat.
Yeah, I didn't know if she was faking it or not.
No, I think that's when she says, like, I can relax. Yeah, I can relax. But when she wakes up and they have to get off the plane and they have to catch another flight, and like, grandma has spoken to the whole plane. So everyone is helping and swapping emails.
And they're saying, like, have fun with Ken and Lou.
Yeah. And she was like, someone must have told grandma that her whole family would die, and she makes friends with every fucking person she meets. And I was just like, love that frustration of being in a family with someone who's over-friendly.
Yeah.
When you're the one who is uptight and anxious.
Yeah.
And you're like, I have to fucking get somewhere. And then they put in the wheelchair, she wheels down the ramp into a body shop. Yeah. And like knocks over all the soaps and stuff.
Yeah.
And again, because Swift's so young, she thinks they're going to get arrested for doing that. And grandma's like laughing her head off so badly that she can't breathe and she has to have her nitro spray. And it's like, there's actually a lot of like farcical moments in it that are just so funny. But also, at the same time, you are dealing with this like, person really, who's really, really old and really, really ill.
Yeah.
I'm very glad you enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it. Did your dad make friends with people publicly?
My grandpa was more embarrassing than him. My grandpa also said, my job is to be embarrassing. So my dad had inherited this idea.
Yeah.
So again, my dad's view was like, but it's not, what you're going through is not as bad as what I went through.
Right.
And that's what I'm now doing to be my daughter, being like, well, it's not as bad. It was more just, because I think what I like about her, she's like a friendly old lady, isn't she? And she's charming. And she's talking about basketball and she's asking him stories.
Yeah.
My dad would more just talk to people, not
my
necessarily.
My dad used to wink. My dad would wink. If we were on a bus, for instance, say we were going swimming, he was taking us swimming, he would wink at other children and he didn't understand. Like,
oh God.
And once, this is the most embarrassing thing he did, once we went to stay in his flat, so he lived near Waterloo, and some children were being horrible to me and Cheryl. We went out to play and it was very rough, and it wasn't our manner.
Yeah,
and
it wasn't your end.
So these kids were like, you know, fuck off back to Romford. And my dad came out, and my dad's not an aggressive person, so what he did was pretended he wanted to kiss all these girls. So because they'd made fun of my jacket I was wearing. So he was like, but your jacket is so gorgeous. Give me a kiss.
Oh no, I'm so embarrassed already.
And afterwards my dad said to me, if you don't want to be aggressive, then you have to be funny. So he was trying to say to me, you'd be funny, you deflect it, and there's all these kids run away. But I was like, Dad, they'll think you're a pedo. Like, you haven't solved this problem. Now they think I've got a bad jacket and a pedo, Dad.
But also, we are understanding why you do comedy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, and you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, and what's worse is, like, my friends thought my dad was funny. And I feel bad for him because me and my brother thought he was so embarrassing.
I think that is just, and the same within the book, it's with other people's parents, we don't have, they're not our parents.
Yeah.
So we're able to sort of just take them, accept them as they are and think what wonderful qualities they have.
Like, he'd like do stuff and they'd be like, yeah, your dad's so funny. And I'd be like, just what the, no, stop. Just very loud. Very, very loud, I think I can deal with chatty. It was just being so loud and unaware of other people and farting very loudly in public places.
Oh, wow.
Very loudly.
Okay.
We all fart.
Yeah.
No big deal. So, listen, tell me. So we recommend this. 5 weirdos out of 5.
Have we started doing that, have we? I think we recommend everything we're reading. I think we recommend reading in general.
We do recommend reading.
I just don't
want
the other books to be upset. we've just gone, okay, out of all the books so far, we recommend this one.
It made me want to read her other stuff as well.
Best-selling author of Summer of My Amazing Luck, A Boy of Good Breeding, A Complicated Kindness, The Flying Troutmans, Irma Voth, All My Puny Sorrows, Fight Night and Women Talking, and one work of nonfiction, Swing Low, A Life.
But yeah, I think she's a writer that I'm very glad I've come across because she's brilliant.
Yeah. I'm worried that we've featured too many books by Faber and it's going to look like I'm biased towards my publishers.
Because
when I noticed it's another Faber, I was like, I think we've done 70% Faber
have
books.
We?
I think so.
Well, I think that's a sign that they're a great publisher.
Suck up.
It's just good books.
Yes. And we didn't do that on purpose.
No, I chose that one, even you.
Yeah.
Although Faber made me. They knocked on my house.
So they give you a £5 book voucher every time you do it.
Oh, I'd definitely do it for a £5 book voucher.
I've got some swag. I did get some swag.
Did you?
They sent me a Big Swiss mug and a jumper because we talked about Big Swiss on the podcast.
I didn't get a Big Swiss jumper.
I know. Well, you can ask and then maybe you'll get it.
Oh, do you hear that, listeners? She didn't say she'd give me her jumper. No, you can ask.
I've worn it in bed. You don't want my jumper.
Okay, I don't want your jumper. Well, that's it nice of them.
It's really nice. It's a very cool jumper and mug, actually.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to ask for you to have them.
No, too. I don't want to get them because my friend asked. Why aren't they sending them to both of us?
Because I did ask them.
Oh,
I was in a meeting and I'd seen them on Instagram and I was like,
you didn't say that bit.
I was like, what do you have to do to get that mug and jumper? And they were like, oh, we're sending them out to influencers who are mentioning the book. And I went, I've done a podcast on it.
Oh, good work. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I just need to become an influencer. A bookfluencer.
Bookfluencer. Would you want to be a bookfluencer?
No, it seems like quite a lot of, you have to do a lot of content.
I then just don't trust them as well.
Yeah,
if you're doing it because someone sent you a book and a jumper, for instance, I think, well, you're open to bribery.
Well, Sarah Pascoe, you just outed yourself. It's not
actually no. I've seen it from the other side. When my book came out, they sent it to lots of influencers, and what influencers do is they take a picture of it and go, "Just been sent this book."
Yeah,
and that doesn't make me.
But that's what happens to me, and happened to me. People just said, "Oh, I've seen this book," and what. This is how it works.
Oh.
You see the image of a book.
Yeah.
You keep seeing it. And the next time you're in the shop, you're like, oh, yeah, Fight Night. I've seen that. But you can't remember where. You're just like, oh, yeah.
So you're saying it does work.
That's how I buy books.
Oh, so I get the opposite. I go like, ugh, don't try and influence me. I'll never read it.
And yet it has worked.
No, but I never saw this.
Oh, how weird.
Never ever saw it.
Oh, okay. Well, they know how to get to you. It's through me.
Oh, there are so many beautiful lines, actually.
I know, we haven't read out enough funny bits.
I tell you what, let's just talk about this bit at the end, because it's about applause, and applause is how things end. You know, it shows. Did you find this meaningful to you as a performer? So the mother is an actress.
Oh, yeah.
She hates applause.
Oh, yeah, that was really funny.
And so mum said, applause seems sarcastic and bizarre. She hates applause even for herself. And grandma asked her how the audience is supposed to express their gratitude for her performance. And mum said, just by sitting there quietly. I just loved it.
That makes
talk
me
about
think
how
of you.
Incredible the writing is.
In the pandemic, I missed applause so much. I made my husband applaud me when I used to come into the room.
Yeah.
I used to come into the room and bow
so
as if I'd done a show.
For you.
And he'd applaud just so I was like, thank you. I just needed to hear it.
Yeah.
I missed it. I don't want the audience to be in silence. I want the applause.
When she hears clapping, mum gets really sad. I think that there's so many performers who would understand
that, yes.
And what we're being told about a character.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant.
It's very complex. Grandma said that's because it means the show is over. Mum talked about her hatred of applause in therapy. But when the therapist tried to understand what she meant, mum said, ah, yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Just fuck it.
It's so good. I can't recommend it enough. I just love this book. It's such a delight of a book. And it's one of those, not that this matters, but it's an easy read. It won't take you forever. It's not going to hurt your wrists.
It does matter because there are times when that's what you want is a book. And when you pick it up,
it's just a delightful
there,
read. You're just going to jump in.
Flows,
you'll do it in probably a week, 2 weeks. And you can pop it in your bag. It won't annoy you.
Pop it in your bag.
Pop it in your bag because it's a nice size. It's not going to be like lugging it around.
You're very sizist with literature.
Yes, because sometimes then you get grumpy at your bag because you're like, oh, that bloody book. And it's like ruins the enjoyment of the book. You're like, oh, it's so heavy.
I saw on the day that Richard Osman's book came out, the most recent Thursday Murder Club, about 150 people reading a massive hardback.
Wow.
On the train to
Well, that's like Harry Potter, though. He's in a different world.
Exactly. So I think sometimes people love the big, chunky.
Yeah, occasionally. Book, yeah. But like if it's like this, you know, pop it in your bag. Don't think about it. So nice.
Some people don't carry bags.
We don't have the time. We don't have the time for that kind of shocking revelation. Yeah. Right. Any last sign to end on?
That was it.
That was it. I was just checking. Yeah. I thought you were going to get another.
Because you end things with applause. So that's why it was on theme.
Right, let's do it. Ready?
Are we clapping?
Yeah.
But she would hate that.
Hope you don't feel sad.
Oh, no.
Don't feel sad. We're saying well done, Miriam. Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
Next week's book guest is Julia by Sandra Newman.
Sarah's novel Weirdo and my book, You're Not Alone, are both available to buy in bookshops now.
Also, I've got a live Weirdo event at the South Bank Centre on May the 9th if you'd like to come.
Oh, book your ticket. What are you doing? Go. Book your ticket now. Don't wait.
Thanks, Grandma.
No worries.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.